You've tuned in to Naturopathy Earth Radio in occult health news, where you get the latest on medical cover-ups, government malfeasance, toxins being put in our food and home, as well as sound, clean eating principles. We are here to cast a light on what the big sick care industry and its government shills don't want you to know. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of shackles of Big Food and start your journey now on a long, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathy Earth. Here's your host, A. Gregory Luna.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. And welcome back to another episode of Naturopathy Earth Radio and occult health news. I hope you are doing well today. Before we begin talking about which apps are the worst for our youths, not our residents in Utah, but our youths, as they would say over in New York, the youths. The website is Naturopathic Earth. Please peruse it. I wrote some articles this week about how to eradicate a glossy white tongue, because I'm sure that affects so many people in your life. I also wrote an article about the benefits of journaling, and I recently wrote some recipes. One of them was on sweet potatoes and how to spruce up some sweet potatoes. So go check those out. And of course, there's tons of other articles. 5 morning biohacks that you should do. That was one of my first articles I wrote probably a year and a half ago. There's one on garlic, the benefits of ginger, the benefits of cinnamon for you who like more of that botanical medicine kind of stuff. So there's just a lot of articles there. So go check it out. Also, of course, I am a certified paleo-inspired health coach, so if you need to lose some weight, contact me and I'll help you lose it. If you subscribe in the opt-in on the main page, you get an initial email consultation for gratis for free. So do that. Patreon, that is our patronizing account. If you want to donate a couple of bucks a month to support this website and this endeavor of Kate and myself, please do so. Follow the links on the episode page. And, of course, I wrote Confessions of an Obese Child and published it on Amazon Kindle and Barnes & Noble Nook. You can follow the links on the episode notes. It's $2.99. Please consider purchasing it and reading it. And then please post a review. All right, let's talk about which apps are worse for our kids. All right, so there are a couple of reasons why I wanted to cover this topic. First of all, school is resuming for many of you, and I will be returning to school. School starts, the students return on the 27th. So as you're listening to this, I've already returned for what we call in-staff development, which is typically somnolescent meetings. Very boring, but it is what it is, so we have to go back. And I noticed that I have to listen to all my episodes, not because I'm some sort of narcissist. It's because I have to make sure there's no major mistakes in them or any music editing snafus. And I noticed that I get the most heated up when I talk about two topics. One, screen addiction and social media stuff. Two, big pharma drugs. That's when I get all apoplectic and all angry and all visceral at the end. And so we also did that episode last week on social media filters causing body dysmorphia. And I just thought it'd be good to do this episode now because social media is horrible. Like, I'm not going to mince words. Sure, maybe 10 years ago when you could get on Facebook or MySpace and your sister lives in Connecticut and you're over in Colorado, and it's a great way to share pictures before we had smartphones where you could do that. Sure, that's great. Now it is a humongous problem, not just with the youth. They surely are addicted. About 98% of them are addicted to their phones. But even with the majority of adults, and I hate to say it, the majority of women, the women have a little more predilection toward the smartphones and always being on the apps, including Pinterest. So it is a major problem. And I'm not going to say there's men who aren't on this problem. The men are more with the video games. But certainly, we as the West, or we as Americans, have a major problem with screens. So what better occasion for me to lambast and to pontificate about one of the things I hate the most of as a high school teacher than screens. So we are going to be gleaning off an article from the HuffPost, Instagram ranked most dangerous social media app for young people's mental health. Instagram is the most dangerous social media site when it comes to young people's mental health, new research has claimed. I'm drinking some tea here. A survey of almost 1,500 14 to 24-year-olds found that the photo sharing platform has serious impact on young people's body image and the quality and quantity of sleep they get. Now, that being said, I'm not a big fan of this survey because it only has 1,500 people in it. Not a lot, but still, let's keep going. It also contributes to bullying, anxiety, FOMO, right? Depression, and genuine fear of missing out that makes it difficult to disconnect. The research by the Royal Society for Public Health and the Young Health Movement found. So this is a British study. Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook were reported to be similarly damaging, with only YouTube ranked as having an overall positive influence on young people's lives. I would show you, there's this graph, and perhaps I'll put on the episode notes, where there's like an equator line where everything above it is net positive, everything below it is net negative. So YouTube is barely, barely net positive. It's like if the equator is 0 degrees latitude, YouTube is like 10 degrees north latitude. So it's barely above the equator. Then right below it, 20 degrees, we would use all these geography terms, 20 degrees latitude south will be Twitter. So Twitter is the least net negative. Then about 40 degrees would be Facebook. Then about 60 degrees would be Snap. And then way down near the Antarctic Circle, around 70 degrees south latitude, would be Insta. The Royal Society for Public Health, otherwise known as the RSPH, and the Young Health Movement, the YHM, are now calling on social media platforms to introduce a heavy usage pop-up warning and to identify users who could be suffering mental health problems and discreetly signpost to support. I have no problem with that. I do not have a problem with that. I mean, is there ever going to be a time where you get on Facebook and there's going to be like a warning, like a cigarette warning, spending excessive time on Facebook, or for the guys, spending excessive time on Warcrack or Call of Duty or all these games where the guys will be on literally 4 days straight defecating in their pants? This is a major problem in Korea and Japan and China. By the way, are we ever going to have these warnings? Probably not, because these companies, of course, have their whores in Hollywood and their whores in D.C., and they will put in tons of money to bribe the politicians to make sure this doesn't happen. But it would be nice, right? Ignorance is not bliss. It's all about awareness and then you making the decision. The organizations also said platforms such as Facebook should highlight when photos have been airbrushed, a move supported by more than two-thirds of young people. Hey, I didn't even know you could airbrush photos on Facebook. Maybe it's like magazine photos. Shirley Kramer, chief executive of the RSPH, said that the social media must become less of a wild west when it comes to young people's mental health and well-being. Quote, "Social media has been described as more addictive than cigarettes and alcohol and is now so entrenched in the lives of young people that it's no longer possible to ignore it when talking about young people's mental health issues." Close quote. Amen. I completely agree with that. She continues, "It's interesting to see Instagram and Snapchat ranking as the worst for mental health and well-being. Both platforms are very image-focused and appears they may be driving feelings of inadequacy and anxiety in young people." Well, we know two episodes back, we talked about how the filters make you or can lead to a rise in social dysmorphia where you have an inappropriate view of yourself, and you have a view of yourself as being typically uglier and fatter than you really are. That's what essentially body dysmorphia is. So we know that the more that you're on it and the more you're posting, the more you're likely to have body dysmorphia and the more you're likely to have eating disorders because you think you're fat and ugly, and you're more likely to do plastic surgery when you get older. So it is not a shock that the two apps that are most responsible for image focus are going to be the worst. Kramer added, quote, "We want to promote and encourage the many positive aspects of network platforms and avoid a situation that leads to social media psychosis, which may blight the lives of our young people," close quote. I love the fact that she uses the word blight, because I use that word in school all the time when I tell the students that. Screen addiction. Actually, I tell non-teachers, I tell friends or people I bump into in the gym, in the steam room, that like, what's teaching like? And I tell them it's like the iPhones are the biggest blight on public school education. So I love the fact that she used the word that I use, blight. And so look, the many positive aspects of network platforming. Okay, so they have this the little graph, the Royal Society of Public Health, and they show a little phone, kind of a vertiginous view. And it has on one side the positive things, and they're stretching out, kind of like a bar graph. And then on the left side of the phone are all the negatives. So on the positive, their opinion, social media can lead to awareness, acceptance, emotional support, self-expression. Okay, you can't express yourself, sure. Self-identity, real-world relationships, because you're sharing stuff with your friends, community building. And on the bad side, anxiety, depression, loneliness, lack of sleep, which is the worst one. Lack of body image or having body dysmorphia, second worst one. Bullying, and then fear of missing out. The survey asked young people how different social media sites impacted on 14 significant health and well-being issues. And I just mentioned most of them right there. While users pointed out a number of negative effects about Instagram, the platform was praised when it came to self-expression and self-identity. Okay, great. This is the other argument I get from the kids about tattooing. I'm not a firm proponent of tatting, especially in the last 15, 20 years. You see, because of all these tat shows and on, reality shows, all these like women in particular are like tatting up, like doing sleeves, right? A whole arm, whole legs. And my students are all, most of them are pretty pro tattoo. And I tell them, I go, why? I think it mutilates the body. And of course, this is the old man talking. It mutilates the body, and nobody looks better with a tattoo. Now, arguably, I guess if there's some really ripped, cut dudes, a tattoo would actually make them look better. But maybe look sexier, more dangerous, which the women like. But women never look better with a tattoo. I hate to be sexist, but women never look better with a tattoo. And so the girls will say, "Well, it's a form of self-expression." Well, look, go write a book, go paint, go journal. There's other ways you could self-express aside from mutilating your body, but that is a separate topic. Michelle Napchin, head of policy at Instagram, said that keeping the app, quote, "a safe and supportive place," close quote, is its top priority, especially when it comes to young people. No, it's not. The whole raison d'etre, the whole reason for existence of these apps is to keep you on the apps as long as possible. They've done studies on this. I mean, Snap and Instagram, Facebook, they hired all the scientists that were responsible for gambling machines to find out how do you keep people engaged for the longest amount of possible. And so, of course, you have the lights and the pretty interface, but mainly with the social media, it's the reward centers of the brain that it lights up. And I guess most salient would be the like button. The like button was the best creation that social media ever did, because it puts that what we would say, the social pressure, the social prestige of when every time you post something, how many likes are you getting, or how many likes is your friend getting, or how many likes is your frenemy getting. And so much of our self-esteem gets revolved around the likes of our posts, and we become obsessed with it. So no, their top priority is keeping you on the app. What's his name? Sean, the guy who created Napster, who's played by Justin Timberlake on the social media. Sean Parker. That's right. Sean Parker came out, and I mentioned this on the episode about how Steve Jobs didn't allow his kids to have iPhones and iPads. Sean Parker came out, and he said straight out, it's like, look, I was involved in this from the very beginning in the early noughts. And yes, we don't care about your kids' health. All we care about is making money off the advertising and all the data mining and selling the data mining. We know this is highly destructive to the minds of people, in particular young adults, but we don't care. He admitted it. So look, don't fall for this, head of policy, it is a safe and supportive place. They don't give a damn about your mental health. Here she goes with more with the propaganda. Every day, people from all over the world use Instagram to share their own mental health journey and get support from the community. Close quote. For those struggling with mental health issues, we want them to be able to access support on Instagram when and where they need it. All right, so fine. If you're suicidal, maybe it's good to post something so you have your network of support, or if you're pro-Anna or something like that, maybe. But as a whole, it is certainly not good for you. But let's keep going with the propaganda Snapchat here for who works for Instagram. That's why we work in partnership with experts to give people the tools and information they need while using the app, including how to report content, get support for a friend they are worried about, or directly contact an expert to ask for advice on an issue they may be struggling with. Yeah, this really doesn't do much. It's kind of like 13 Reasons Why. If you ever watched the first season of that, they really didn't post, like, if you're contemplating suicide, contact these numbers, because that show was triggering a lot of people into committing suicide and doing kind of a copycat of that show. Now, when season two came out, I watched a couple episodes of it and I stopped watching it. Now they start doing the public service announcements beforehand, but they didn't do it on the first one because Netflix wants the ratings. They don't. You really don't get to track the ratings of Netflix. Nielsen's isn't involved with the tracking of the streaming networks, but for sure they want you to watch the show as much as possible. And then they'll go back and in hindsight, oh yeah, we should have done this. Just like when Big Pharma and Big Devices caught making mistakes, Big Foods caught putting toxins in our food. Oh, we didn't know. Now we'll take it out for sure, and we'll reimburse a couple of people who do the class action lawsuits and settle out of court for $20 million while we're making $5 billion on a particular drug. It's insidious. All five platforms are praised by those polled for offering somewhere to find emotional support and to build a community, while YouTube was ranked as the best place to visit to gain awareness about other people's health experiences. And you can see why YouTube would be rated the best. And as I said, if we're using the geography analogy, and the equator is average, YouTube was barely above average. But YouTube is kind of, and believe me, I think there's some total inanity in watching YouTube, like watching people play games, video games while you're playing video games, or watching people unwrap presents, or the ASMR, watching people make sounds or put on makeup to help you relax. I mean, some of this stuff on YouTube is ridiculous. But it's pretty lack of interface, kind of like in the old days when we played video games, you were just playing your Super NES or your ColecoVision or your Genesis or whatever. With YouTube, YouTube's like watching television. And that's not to say there's not problems with porn and inappropriate material, but as a whole, you're just watching people's videos. And so it doesn't really trigger into that body dysmorphia and thoughts of helplessness and suicide depression and all that the other apps do. Okay, let's take a quickie. Okay, so one of the reasons all the apps are bad is because it leads to lack of sleep. And we've talked about on several episodes on MPE Radio, go back to the early ones. I think that the two main ones on insomnia are episodes between episodes 10 and 30. But it's causing kids not to get enough sleep. And it's not just because they're staying up in their bed with their phones. And honestly, parents, you should not be allowing your kids to have their phone when they're going to sleep for a host of reasons. The other thing is just the blue light that's being emitted. Even if you put in the filters, which is great, there's a lot of reasons that kids would be up at night if you give them access to a computer or a phone. So this is leading to a lot of kids not getting enough sleep. I mean, I've asked my kids, they come in, oh, I'm so tired, I want to sleep at 3. I'm like, what were you doing, homework? No, I was just binge watching, you know, fill in the blank on my phone in bed. I'm like, man, I don't have any sympathy for you. I have legit insomnia and I'm trying to get to sleep. So that's one. So they're tired. And of course, not going back to the phones and yet another reason why we should unplug the router and take all the phones and computers away and hide them somewhere every night is the porn problem. We've talked about how 50% of English men in the age of their 30s are addicted to porn and have erectile dysfunction. So we also know at the average age that a boy is exposed to porn is age 8. So we don't want people accessing their phones late at night. But that's definitely an issue. But let's go back to Instagram. So according to the scientists, Instagram easily makes girls and women feel as if their bodies aren't good enough as people add filters and edit their pictures in order to make them look perfect. The practice of editing photos contributes to a generation of young people with poor body image and body confidence, the authors explain. It reminds me of that scene. I've mentioned it before in Mean Girls, where Katie, who's Lindsay Lohan's character, goes to Regina George's house with all the other plastics, and they're all looking in the mirror, and they're all like, oh, my armpits are this, and they're all like criticizing their body, and Katie is looking at him like, you're all gorgeous. But see, that this is the problem with these apps, is because they make you focus on all your imperfections and not on your strength. In order to alleviate this effect, researchers commented that social media platforms make it clear to users when a photo has been digitally manipulated. I think that's a great idea. One idea is to provide a small icon or watermark at the bottom of a photoshopped or filtered photo. The scientists also advise that social media platforms remind users when it's time to sign off. One suggestion is for app developers to track how much time users spend on social media, providing a pop-up when he or she nears, quote, heavy usage. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't like anyone tracking anything that we do. But in terms of something that pops up, I have no problem with that. You know, if you're watching your streaming TV, there's always that thing that comes up on Netflix. Like, are you still watching? Yes or no? After you've like watched 5 episodes and haven't touched anything. So why can't they do that? The little thing that comes up. The research supports previous evidence that social media use can have a negative effect on mental well-being. A 2015 study found that more than 2 hours of social media use is linked with mental health issues, psychological distress, and suicidal thoughts in teens. 2 hours. 2 hours is nothing. I've seen studies that show that the typical teen is on their phones 16 hours a day. Now, your parents, 16, your parents are like, well, how can that be? They're at school. Look, this is a news flash, and this just isn't my school. And of course, there's going to be exceptions. Like, for example, Kate's kids go to a school where they can't have phones at all. I mean, they can't even talk about pop culture at her school. It's like these big fascists in black suits are going to come if you mention Elsa or something like that. But they don't allow them to have any Disney or any pop culture stuff. But as all in public schools, your kids, aside from vaping, which is the other big lie that your kids aren't telling you that they're probably doing at school. Go back to the episode on vaping I did. It's about 20 episodes back. Aside from that, I mean, your kids are on the phone all day at school. Every period. I would say 6 out of 8 periods, because on occasion there are going to be teachers that lock up the phones to their recklessness or to their disregard, because again, if something happens when we need to confiscate phones and the student or the parent says that we touched it, cracked it, broke it, then we are in trouble. So most teachers don't deal with it. And so it's like whack-a-mole. We're just trying to get them to redirect, put the phone away, and then the next kid pulls out the phone, put the phone away, and then the next kid pulls. It's like whack-a-mole. But no, your kids are binge watching shows all through school. Most of them. Okay, not all of them, but a lot of them are. A lot of them are. And it's extremely frustrating. So 16 hours on your phone. 16 hours. And that includes texting, of course, and internet stuff. But all this isn't to say that you should delete your apps entirely. They can also be helpful in certain circumstances. For example, the study found that Facebook provides the opportunity for young people to learn about the mental health experiences of others through posts that their friends may share on their newsfeed. Social media can also be a positive platform for self-expression. Yeah. Instagram has been working to focus on mental health too. The app, which has 700 million users, that's twice the pop of the United States, launched a campaign earlier this month aimed at starting a conversation about mental illness. Now, I don't give a damn about this campaign, because it reminds me, anytime you see those smoking cessation commercials that you see on TV, or this is what smoking does, and then at the end it'll be sponsored by Philip Morris, which of course is one of the largest tobacco makers. And so they know it's the same thing. These people are so devious. They know that their product is addictive. So by having these commercials or these campaigns, they think that the ignorant, naive low information voter, so to speak, will watch these commercials and be like, oh, look, Instagram cares about the addictive quality of their products. Or, oh, Philip Morris, they want us to stop smoking. No, they don't. That's just all good PR, ladies and gentlemen. They just want the good PR for the sheeple to think, oh, they're so great. They know their product is hyper addictive. And so you could literally show 24 hours of smoking cessation ads on social media. You should get off these app ads, and it won't really make a difference because they wire in to the brain because they use these social scientists and they know exactly how to make it so hyper addictive that the large majority of us can't get off of it. All right, so let's finish up and let's talk about some possible things that you can do to minimize your addictions. Okay, here's some suggestions I have for you. Now, a lot of these are going to be like, oh my God, Gregor, you're ridiculous. This is never going to happen with my kids. But people of different ages listen to this, and people have kids of different ages. So some of these might be a little drastic. But look, don't give your kids a phone. I'm serious. They don't need a smartphone for sure. When they, and I think the average age that a kid gets to their first phone is 10. 10. Why does a 10-year-old need a smartphone? Really, think about it. This is what I would do, and this is what my oldest is 7, and I'm worried. I did rant about my ex-wife in the previous episode about her vaccinating my children without my consent recently. I'm concerned that my ex-wife will give them a phone, and so the weekends they come over here, I will definitely confiscate them. But this is what you can do, and we talked about this on the episode on cell phones being addictive. Get them a flip phone. Just get them a flip phone. Like, the part of the FOMO of middle school is that most kids at that age and the tweens are texting. That's how they communicate. They don't really call, right? You never see kids actually on the phone, right? And so they're texting. So get them a flip phone where they can text, but they don't need a phone with social media. Also, start them at a very young age telling them about the problems with screens. My 7-year-old knows. I tell them all the time, like, do you want to be an addict? Now, granted, it's probably not the best parenting technique, but I tell all of them very early on how screens can be addictive, how the computer can be addictive. It takes you away from doing other interesting things. It stunts your imagination. It shortens your thinking, your attention span, and so forth. So I start them at a very young age. Now, you could say, Gregory, that's going to backfire, and they're going to become, you know, one of those Korean kids who's playing video games 4 days straight, nonstop. Now, maybe. But I have to do what's best for my kids. And I know the studies, and they're not good. Now, going back to the school where Kate has her kids attend, they don't have a computer lab. They don't have a computer lab. So people will go there and visit the school and be like, what? Well, this school is such an incredibly good school. It has like a 2,000 student waiting list to get in. Like, what? And it's a charter school, by the way. And they'll be like, what? There's no computer lab? Well, the kids will fall behind. No, they won't, because the studies have shown that kids catch on very quickly with computers and with touch screens and with apps and all these computer things, especially if you start them very late exposure to them. You don't need to give your kid a phone at age 3 because you're worried, oh, they're going to fall behind, you know, Chance and Phoebe in school. I need to give them my phone or my iPad. No, the studies are showing you can have a kid who's like 12 and never been on an iPad, and like within an hour, they figured out, caught up to the kid who's been on it since they were 3. So this school is great. No computer labs. They don't need a computer lab. They need to know how to type. Just pull out some typewriters like I did. That's how I learned how to type. Got to learn how to type, but we don't need these screens. So look, get them a flip phone so they can text. They don't need a smart device. Okay, so what are some other things that you can do, you adults? Well, going back to the kids, I mentioned on the game addiction episode that what some people do is they charge their iPad up and they tell the kid, whatever the kid's age is, and then they hide the plug and they say, look, you can play this iPad until the battery runs out. When the battery runs out for the week, you're out for the week. I don't think that's a bad idea because it helps the kid regulate themselves, exhibit some self-control. And I think that that's a pretty good idea. It's like, go, okay, hit Sunday afternoon here, 100% energy charged. Yeah, you play it as long as you want. Once it runs out, it runs out. That's something else you can do. Now, what I do, and luckily because I am 40, that I kind of grew up past this. So I'm not really wired. Now, yes, I post stuff on Twitter and I post my episodes on Facebook and on Instagram, but I don't peruse anybody's profiles. No offense, anybody is listening. I just post directly from my phone or from SoundCloud where all my podcasts are, straight into those platforms. But one of the things you can do is definitely turn off the notifications. We don't need a notification and a ring and a buzz every time somebody likes your picture or every time you get an email, because we know 95% of our emails are junk and spam. We don't need that constant vibrating. You guys all know the phantom phone syndrome, where you think your phone is ringing or you think your phone is buzzing. No. Turn off all notifications for your mail. Put it on the pull feature. That's what I have it. So I only get email when I click on the mail button on my phone. So I control it. It's not controlling me. I don't know what's going on my Twitter unless I go on Twitter and I see how many notifications I have. Same thing for FB. Same thing for Facebook. So that removes a lot of that day in, every second of the day hypervigilance that these smart devices put us on. So that's definitely something you can do that's very easy. Now, FOMO, fear of missing out. Like, what's really that important that's going on in an hour that you need to know at that moment? Oh, because Sherry posted a photo of her ice cream, or like, you know, Bobby Sue is at the grocery store. I mean, are we that much of narcissists that we really think people care about those kind of things? None of those are important. You can leave your ringer on if somebody texts you if you want, but turn off all the notifications. And lastly, of course, dim the phone at night, dim your computer at night, wear blue light blocking glasses if you have them like I do, but put your phone on do not disturb lots of times. Definitely when you're driving. Again, that's very dangerous. I think it's more distracting to drive when you're texting or you're looking at your phone than it is when driving drunk. So download your music or download your podcast and listen to it when you're driving, and don't look at your phone, and put on do not disturb. And certainly put on airplane mode as well. I put my phone on airplane mode pretty much like at 9 o'clock every night. And I love it because I don't want to know what's going on with my friends, honestly. I don't want to know what's going on with you. You know, if there's an emergency, people in my life know how to reach me. But again, it's disconnecting from these things, because if you can step back and you can retrospect, you'll see that we are slaves to these devices. We are slaves. And the only time we really notice that is when you have some precocity, or you're precocious, especially if you're a teenager, or you have a lot of like self-awareness, or you're just a cynical a-hole like I am, where you just see everything for the BS that it is. But either way, I'm not saying that's a good quality that I have. But step away and see that we are being controlled by our phones, right? Doesn't it say in the Bible, you can't be a master to two things, money and God or whatever? We are being slaves to the master that is our phones and social media and screens. And we really need to just take a step back, do some journaling, do some praying, and realize how much control this device is having on my life. And as I mentioned before, there are no longitudinal studies to show what this effect is going to have on our lives. Smart devices have been around 10 years. What's this effect going to be on our minds, especially the minds of our youth, when they've been around it for 50 freaking years? So you're playing with possible dynamite. So please stay off of them as much as you can. Airplane mode is your friend. No, they're manipulating you. They just want to make money off the ad revenue and the data mining. No, you are being used. And the service that they're providing you, again, step back. What kind of service are they providing you? Depression on a plate? Anxiety on a plate? Eating disorders on a plate? I mean, come on. Do we really want that service? As always, hit the subscribe button so these episodes come directly to your phone. And as always, post a review, an honest review for MP Radio and A Cold Health News, Kate's Apothecary, and Confessions of an Obese Child. Until next time, guys, take care. God bless. Please get off the phone.
Thank you for listening to NPE Radio and Occult Health News.
visit our website at naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Occult Health News and at our Facebook page at Naturopathy Earth. Please consider a donation at patreon.com/naturopathicearth. Consider subscribing to our podcast. And as always, please post an honest review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to this. And remember the core belief at NPE. Let food be thy medicine. Let nature be thy healer. Until next time. Music attributed to Nine Inch Nails.